My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
He's got it, left corner offensive zone, on his backhand to Connor McDavid, who breaks loose. McDavid, sharp angle shot, he scores, and Edmonton takes a 3-0 lead. Connor McDavid, his seventh from Fogel, and the Oilers threatening to drag the Panthers all the way back to Alberta.
Yeah, you nailed that early. That is exactly what that voice is.
Oilers radio, Vince McMahon with the call, or somebody sounding like him.
I mean, he does need a job now.
Yes, he does. Are the Oilers going to make history and come from 3-0 down and win? They close the gap on the Panthers. They are heading back to Edmonton with a 5-3 victory over the Panthers. They've been getting to Bobrovsky the last couple of games. Woo-hoo-wee!
Boy, this would be a big victory for Canada's COVID protocols versus Florida and their open society. Like, this would be...
Is that what we're going with?
I mean, like, everything's a culture war now, Chop. And so I think that that's part of it, is that that's a big factor in this series. How has Edmonton's conditioning been able to hold up, knowing that they've had to travel with their weakened immune systems to Florida?
God, without that? Wow. Oh, my gosh.
I'm kidding. Everybody relax.
So, it's Connor McDavid, a 4-point night. Really good night for him. And Edmonton has... They're halfway home. They are halfway home now. They got two more wins to get. I'll tell you, if they win this one, there's going to be a lot of nervous people in Florida. A lot of dozens of them.
Would a Game 7 potential 3-0 comeback with Edmonton and Florida, do you think... Where would that challenge any of the NBA Finals games, ratings wise?
I mean, NBA Finals games got around 11 million a game. I don't know that it would challenge it. It might. I don't think so, though.
Canadian viewers would not be included in that, right?
Not in the U.S. ratings.
Cumulatively, we wouldn't.
Right.
Which kind of sucks for...
It does. You never know.
Yeah.
Because the NHL, I mean, obviously, they have their own TV contract with CBC up there. I mean, they get their own ratings. So, we'll see. I wonder if Oilers girl is going to be there. You remember her? She was in the crowd.
I remember both of her.
I think this was during the Stars series where she flashed the crowd. It was at a watch party in Edmonton at the arena. She flashed the crowd. It was under her. They were under her jersey. She was wearing a sweater, her Oilers sweater.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she's back in the news. She had a little bit of fame. She did an interview. And people start putting the hate on her now because she's kind of like, well, I didn't want to be this viral. So it's one of those. And now she is deciding to clap back at the haters.
Oilers girl, actually. My name's Kate, but here we are. So I've thought long and hard about what I wanted to say to everybody. Anybody who knows me knows that I'm at one of my favorite places right now. Come here to do some thinking, we'll call it. But I just wanted to say, you could be the most perfect godly f***ing person in the world. You could save kittens from a river if they were drowning. Someone's still gonna hate you. So you know what? At the end of the day, I got drunk and whipped my tits out at an Oilers game and they went viral. F*** you if you don't like it. Woo! Go Oilers!
So the internet's not her place. It's not for her. Like, she does not know what she's dealing with now. And by the way, if that's your favorite, if that's your favorite place, remind me never to go to Edmonton. That looks barren as hell. And she's in a hoodie. It's late June.
Go Oilers!
It is late June. Why? In the date, at nighttime, I get it. Gaylord, Michigan at night, it's 55 degrees.
Beautiful.
At night, it's perfect at
night. GaylordGolfMecca.com.
75 degrees in the middle of summer in July. In the daytime, for it to be 57 degrees, that's not Earth. No wonder why they're complaining about the heat dome in the north.
Man, I just probably shouldn't say anything.
Okay.
I ran through like five different things in my head I wanted to say.
Peyton.
What a proud moment for
Bobby,
let's
give this man a round of applause here, shall we?
If Sean was here, I would say all five of them just to watch it, like the vein in his head burst.
Him melt. Yeah. The growth on this young kid. It's
amazing.
It's a proud big brother moment. It really, really is.
He'll still get fired within 2 years, though.
I think so, too.
Yeah. Nope. I sat on another joke just there when Choppy was making a reference to the growth of this young man.
Absolutely. Very nice. Wow.
Literally, I sat on it.
Yeah. Rangers lose 7-6 to the Mets. Tough one at the Globe. They were up 6-2, and they blow it. And the Mets have taken the first two games of this three-game series. And you can hear the final game of the three-game series. They try to avoid the sweep. 6:30 pregame right here on 105.3. The Fan. Rangers have dropped, oh, God, 5 in a row. 6 of 8. They are 10 back in the American League West. Now tied with Houston, who couldn't get out of their own way a month ago.
Yeah, I mean, they're 11-23 over their last 34 games. And this entire run we've talked about, it's not been the pitching. Like, you've been getting great pitching, and it's just the bats aren't showing up.
Last night, no, but it's just
pitching fine. The last couple games, like, I mean, you've had some issues, and it's especially frustrating last night when it's like the bats finally show up.
Yeah, you didn't.
Wyatt Langford hits one over the fence finally. You score 6 runs in the first 5 innings. You get a 3-run homer from Josh Smith, and you don't do anything.
You didn't take advantage of the pitching you got over the last month.
No.
2 months. We are 8 games away from the midway point. Believe that? 8 games away. They're 34-40. 7 games. Boy, my math. No, 8. They're 33-40. 8 games away from the midway point of the season, and they're 10 back. I don't know what they do. I really don't.
Scherzer's coming back Saturday. He will start Saturday. And, yeah, I mean, we're careening quickly to the All-Star break when everybody is going to kind of make an evaluation of where are you? How real are you? By the way, that's an All-Star game, RJ Choppy, and a home run derby. You can hear that right here on 105.3 The Fan.
No.
Yes, you can.
Really?
Promise.
Oh, baby. That's great. I can't wait. Cannot wait right here on The Fan, all the All-Star festivities. We got a little breaking news on 105.3 The Fan, presented by BetQL. Smarter bets start with BetQL. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today. The Pistons have fired Monty Williams a year in to his contract. He still has 5 years and $65 million left on his deal. They got Trajan Langdon in there as their new president of basketball ops, and he was like, you gone. So Monty Williams, who was the fifth highest paid coach in the league, somehow he got that contract, and he's been fired for one season in Detroit.
Yeah, look, this is why you never go full Monty.
No.
That's why people say that. And this is unfair, to be honest. I think to Monty, well, you gave him the worst team in basketball, and you gave him a year.
You gave him a year. It's crazy.
How do you
give a guy a year?
I don't know what you expected him to do. Or now, look, to be fair, is Trajan Langdon coming in there and identifying, man, there's a problem here in how we're trying to foster this young talent. There's a problem in how they're responding to this guy. Or his leadership style is great. Like, does he have some sort of indication of that?
Yeah, he's been bringing Coach K.
Yeah, maybe that's the concern. Or maybe he sees that and he's identified and he's making the right move. Fine. And to be fair, he didn't give Monty Williams that contract. No. But, man, it seems rash to not give the guy any more time than that.
It absolutely does. There's no doubt about that. All right, let's do a little get some award news here.
Yeah, we're watchdogging award definitions out here.
It's amazing. You know, it's the silly season of sports when the Associated Press has to put out definitions on how they give out awards that they gave out 6 months ago.
Yeah, well, and it's because of the award they gave out 6 months ago that they had to tell people, ooh, guys, look, we're really trying to go for heartwarming stories here and not just dad bod coming off of the couch and willing the Cleveland Browns to an ass-kicking at the hands of the Houston Texans in the playoffs. But the Associated Press is clarifying the criteria for the NFL Comeback Player of the Year Award to emphasize that the winner should be a player who overcame injury or illness and not just a player who followed a bad year with a good year. The spirit of the AP Comeback Player of the Year Award is to honor a player who has demonstrated resilience in the face of adversity by overcoming illness, physical injury, or other circumstances that led to him missing playing time the previous season. I actually think this is valuable definition right there, because that was always my argument against Joe Burrow winning it. Where when they said Joe Burrow was Comeback Player of the Year, I was like, coming back from what, though? Like, he hadn't played. Like, he was essentially a rookie coming off of his injury. So I don't understand it. But if you're saying it's overcoming illness or injury or those sort of things, all right, well, then that makes more sense. Because I've always thought comeback meant you come back to form, essentially. You return to what you once were after challenges. That's how I thought the award was. So I'll take that clarification. That's fine. But changing the criteria for the award, according to Pro Football Talk, began to gain momentum after Geno Smith won it in 2022. And in 2023, with Joe Flacco winning it over, obviously, DeMar Hamlin, that became something that they're like, yeah, we probably need to work on this definition. Any issue at all with how they define the award?
Yeah, look, I don't care for that definition. I don't like, to me,
what should that award be? Or should do you think the award's dumb?
Well, like, at some point, I mean, to me, the comeback player of the year means that you're improving.
Yeah.
The award is not about, what they're trying to make this award is who came back from the worst injury to just get on the field. So what they're saying is, all you got to do is get on the field and you're the comeback player of the year. We didn't do anything.
I think it's probably, there were a lot of people who thought it was specifically, I think, in poor taste or whatever you want to say. I think a lot of people were like, how do you just, DeMar Hamlin was dead.
Yeah. Now I get that. That one is, he needs a different award, period.
Yeah. To me, it's a comeback player of the year should be a performance based thing. And if you want a separate, if you want a separate thing, it should just be you shouldn't even have it left up to a whole bunch of, it should be like a panel of three people that go like, who are we going to identify? Who's our story this year? That this is the guy.
That's the guy.
Which, I mean,
DeMar Hamlin needed to be honored somehow. Comeback player of the year, to me, like the performance has to play into an award. Otherwise, it's just who had the worst injury and made it back on the field.
So this is the second debate that started, because in the wake of the NBA Finals, we talked about it right after. Who are you giving the MVP award to? Like, in the NBA Finals, didn't Jaylen Brown got it ultimately? That was probably the right call. But we all kind of felt like, this is weird. There's not somebody who's been super impressive consistently Celtics throughout the entire series. Even with Dallas, I mean, Luka was probably overall the most, but Luka had several stretches where he was not playing well. Mm-hmm. So this has started a discussion. There's a lot of people on social media pushing for it. There's a whole bunch of discussion on Reddit. Different NBA forums have been talking about it this week. There's this groundswell of support in the internet community again, Choppy, for this push for MVP needs to be a separate award from best individual player.
You can have a most outstanding player and you can have an MVP.
You need to award two different things here. You need to award best individual player, and MVP is most valuable. And most valuable would be most impactful player on the best team and player oriented. best individual player overall would be player oriented. It does not matter if you win or lose. And that would be, in this instance, if you had this separate, what Luka probably wins best individual player.
Yes.
And
he does.
MVP for impact would then probably be Jaylen Brown, is who would they, who they would give it to in that sense. But man, I this has always been, you've struck me before, I believe. I don't know if we've had this talk, but I gather from other things that you've said, you believe MVP should be who was the best player, who provided the most value, not like who just on their own provided the most value regardless of what their team did, like how it, and that that's how I've gathered you would call it. Or do you think it should be more about impact to a specific team, even if they weren't necessarily the best overall?
They get to marry it. They got to marry it. Now, like, if you just,
Trout would like never win an MVP.
Right.
If it was that, if the definition was about what you did, Felix Hernandez never would have won a Cy Young when he went 13 and 12.
Right. You got to, I think you have to marry the two. You got to figure out which one fits, because I do think that you can. And, you know, A-Rod won it on a last place team.
Yep.
I think you need to do that. I think you need, if he was far and away the best, you got to give it to him. If it's, if they're two are even, maybe you give it to the guy on the better team who's, you know, was more impactful, but. That's that. I do think there needs to be a best player, or like a most important or most improved, whatever. You want to do that most improved versus comeback player of the year, and you want to do most outstanding and then the MVP. All right, Sean and RJ here, 105 through the Fan, 9 o'clock hour. It is time for a little Brett Boone, Odyssey Baseball Insider, will join the show coming up next on 105 through the Fan.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
A one ball count. Yates about as deliberate as you're allowed to be with the pitch clock, and comes home. There's a swing and a hot shot over third. It's past the diving Duran and down into the left field corner. Nemo scores. J.D. Martinez will stop at third. It's a double for Alonso, and the Mets lead 7-6.
Eric Nadel with the call. Game you heard right here. Rangers lose a tough one. They were up 6-2 after five, and they wind up losing 7-6 to the Mets, who, I mean, they can't lose right now. Was it Grimace? Is that what it was?
Yeah, Grimace. Seven in a row since Grimace threw out the first pitch.
And the Rangers have lost five in a row. We're joined now by Odyssey MLB insider Brett Boone. Insider call is presented by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger is the right product for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Brett is also the host of Brett Boone Podcast, featuring the most notable names in MLB and around sports every week. Morning, Brett. How we doing?
I'm doing good, guys. What's happening?
Not
your Rangers.
No, not the Rangers. Look, when do you decide on a team? Like, when's too late for a team to really make a run? I mean, I guess with 10 games back, there's still 80 games to play, more than that, 90. When is too late?
Well, in today's game, there's a lot more leeway. You have a lot longer leash because of the format and the way it's set up. You know, there's six spots at the table in each league, so you have more time. And I think recent history has proven that winning the division isn't even close to as important as it used to be. You know, the weight of the World Series seems to, you have just as good a chance of going through the wild card bracket as you do winning the division. So at this stage of the game, I think in Texas, because of how great it went a year ago, you know, I was just going over the offensive numbers. And I mean, there were one in every category in 2023. It's a new year. They've been banged up. A lot of their starting rotation, obviously the obvious guys at the top are a Scherzer and a DeGrom that have been out all season. But I'll tell you that the pitching, for the most part, for what you've got, bringing Lorenzen in, he's really done a great job and kind of stopped the bleeding until you get the big boys back. You know, Swoboda, he's been out. The young kid, Young has missed a lot of time. I hear he's on the mend. Carter had that unbelievable run down the stretch last year. He hasn't been the same player. He's missed a lot of time. So you've been banged up a lot. So yeah, you do have that in your back pocket as an excuse, but I'll tell you, I'm looking at that division. I've been talking about it all year, how dominant that Seattle Mariners starting rotation is, and they're starting to show it. They're starting to pull away from the pack in the West. So I think, as far as the West, you're never done. You got 90 games left. That's a lot of games. But I would say at this point, with the Mariners, that starting rotation, I think they're going to win the division this year. Texas trying to grab a wild card. We'll see. Long way to go, but they're definitely behind the eight ball right now.
Brett, if things continue to trend in this direction for Texas, which, 11-23 over the last month plus, if they continue to play poorly and start falling out of favor, at what point do you start looking at, hey, maybe there's some veterans that would be attractive that we can deal at the deadline? I mean, would that be a guy potentially like Lorenzen, who we just talked about, or
sure,
would somebody like Eovaldi potentially be involved in that? Would that be somebody who you think teams would say, hey, that's an attractive veteran starting pitcher we can add at the deadline? We'll give up something decent for Eovaldi.
I think without a doubt, and you know, without actually being in those meetings, in the inner workings of the Texas Rangers, you'll never know on what they're thinking long term. But I think, yeah, that coming off a World Series, an unbelievable run, the way the season's going thus far, if it continues to trend in this way, I think definitely that's going to be one of the Rangers' options to build up and get some more young players in return. That being said, I think right now you're not at that point yet. I think if we're sitting here a month from now, you really got to start considering that. The thing that Major League Baseball has done that I really like, because it's added more strategy to the game, is they put that trading deadline out 2 months instead of one. So it's not that easy slam dunk, hey, we know we're out of it, or no, we're going for it. It's kind of makes you make that decision at that place where, well, are we gonna win or are we not gonna win? I think it really adds a strategic element to it and makes guys in the front office either come out smelling like a rose or, wow, what a bad move. Yeah. But nevertheless, I think it adds excitement to the game. So I think we got a little more time. Let's get to the All-Star break, figure out if this team turns it around. Right now, obviously, they've lost five straight. You mentioned at the top, they're playing a really hot Mets team that's won seven in a row. And I think like 14 out of their last 18, something like that. But the Mets nevertheless have been hot. So that's the way baseball goes. It ebbs and it flows. Right now, these guys aren't ebbing.
No, they're not. And then I think, you know, two things. One, you've got all these guys coming back, but also the other problem that they're going to run into is, you know, with Seattle's pitching being so good, that's not the team that you overcome a big deficit on with the pitching. If they were an offense first team, they didn't have any pitching, maybe you go to slump. With those guys, I just don't know how they blow a 10-game lead. It's happened, but I don't know.
I'll tell you, their bullpen's decent. They're going to trend towards the upper part of the American League, not the lower. But you hit it on the head. Seattle's a real mediocre offensive team. I think this year they've kind of found a nose for the finish line. That's what I'm kind of coining it is. Yeah, it's not the greatest offensive team, but they have that confidence. They've come back. They've walked teams off quite a few times. So once you do that as a player, as a team, you kind of look at each other late when it's close and go, you know, we're going to come back and win this one. Right. And it's a matter of confidence. So I think Seattle has that, but you're right. That starting rotation. They've got a number one in every position. It's just because you get to Wu in the five spot, he can be a bona fide number one at any time. So it's going to be tough in that division to overcome it. I think Seattle's got the best, not only the best pitching in that division or in the American League, I think top to bottom, starting rotation only, let me keep it to rotation. Seattle's got the best pitching in all of the game. And that includes Yankees, Dodgers, Phillies, who are the juggernauts right now.
Insider Call is brought to you by Grainger. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers professional grade supplies and solutions made for every industry, backed by product experts. Call, click Grainger.com or just stop by. We're talking to Brett Boone, Odyssey Baseball Insider.
Okay, so Brett, we actually were discussing a basketball topic yesterday, and when we were talking about it, something came up that we're like, we need to ask Brett Boone for his thought about this tomorrow.
So, without a doubt, I'm a hoop expert.
So the big storyline in the NBA Finals was Kyrie Irving going back to Boston, a place where he is just public enemy number one, and we were trying to wonder how much did that affect him, and what other examples do we have of this existing? And the one in Dallas that we came up with was A-Rod returning to Seattle in 2001 and going back to Safeco for the first time, being there in front of those fans in that, you know, hostile. And I just remember it was, the boos were loud and intense, and we were trying to figure out recollection of that. Do you remember what that atmosphere was like that first game back that A-Rod showed back up in Seattle? And did you guys have any sense like, man, this feels like it's maybe getting to him a little bit? Like he senses it, he feels it, he hears it.
I felt quite the contrary. It almost fuels you. Like, I'm that important. I'm that big of a deal. I'm that good that you've got to boo me this hard. Wow. That as a player, that's a puff your chest out moment versus a go hide in the corner. I think a Barry Bonds type figure in my game experienced that the most of his career, definitely the latter part of his career. I think you watch Altuve, placed, and I have a different opinion on Altuve. I think it's unwarranted. I don't think the Houston thing to me is not a big a deal as everybody made it, but that doesn't matter. But Altuve, to a degree, hears that when he goes everywhere because of the trash can scandal. But I think it's quite the contrary for most athletes. Now, I'll say that with a caveat. I think it's up to the individual, what you're made of, what's inside. Each individual is going to act differently. But from an A-Rod perspective, I thought it was more of a, I don't know, he was booed so hard that it almost felt like, well, you know, kind of the Reggie Jackson thing is they don't boo nobodies. Mm-hmm. So I'm a pretty damn big deal. You're going to boo me this. You care this much that you're going to come out just to boo me. I think it's more of a, that a boy, you're pretty damn special and you're a big deal versus, oh, we hate you. And oh, I'm not going to play good because of it. So that's my interpretation from what I've seen through my life on the Major League Baseball field. Those guys that get booed hard and everywhere they go, it's more of a, you're just adding fuel to the fire, and they're going to be even better player the louder you boo.
Brett, wanted to get your take on the passing of Willie Mays. I know you're a baseball, huge baseball lifer, but you also come from a baseball family that no doubt has had stories from Willie and sure, just the tremendous player that he was.
I think Willie transcends kind of, he's one of those guys that transcends the game. You know, he was so big. He's so part of the culture of Major League Baseball. When you think of baseball, you know, you close your eyes. It's a Babe Ruth, of course, that comes to mind. The Mantle, the Maris, the Lou Gehrigs. But Willie's in that conversation. You know, so he transcends the game. He's more of an icon than just a great Major League Baseball player. I've heard the stories. I've had interactions with Willie through the years, and it's more of a you roll into San Francisco. He's on the field, maybe a handshake, maybe a hello. I didn't get to know him very well, but I hear the stories, you know, from my grandpa, who's got mostly American League stories because he was in the American League his whole career. But he mentioned when you talk about the all-time greats, of course, he wanted to talk about Bob Feller and how Brett, he's better than Randy Johnson and how Ted Williams is the greatest hitter of all time. But when it came to Willie, he just kind of look at you with that, with, and his eyes would bug out, go, you talk about a really good player. So, you know, today's a, you know, it's a sad day for a lot of people, but at the same time, life goes on. We lost one of the all time greats. You know, baseball feels that you're hearing that story put everywhere right now. And it should be one of the all-time greats for me. Definitely a top five player, maybe a top three player in the history of the game. So here's a guy that hit 600 plus home runs and ran it down in center field like Andrew Jones. So a guy that I can kind of look at that I played with and kind of have a feeling what Willie Mays was in his time. So pretty awesome. I had a feeling the other day because they got this big game going on, I think tomorrow at Ricketts. Yeah. Is it Ricketts?
Rickwood,
where Willie played as a young player. He played in that field, and it was going to kind of be a tribute to the Negro Leagues, but Willie Mays was going to be the focal point. I saw on the ticker the other day, it said Willie Mays will not attend the game, and I thought, ooh, if he's not attending that game, something's going on, and sure enough, he passed yesterday. Sad day, but also a day to celebrate one of the greats.
Hey, Brett, we really appreciate it. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
You got it, guys. Thank you.
Brett Boone. That was Odyssey MLB Insider Brett Boone. Insider calls presented by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop on by. I didn't tell him that Peyton thought the catch was overrated.
Oh, you should have done that.
You should have done that. Yeah.
We should have just said.
It was getting late.
No, what we should have done is we should have just thrown it to Peyton for like, Peyton, tell a member of the Boone family, yes, one of the most iconic baseball families, how overrated you think Willie Mays is.
I said the catch was overrated, not the player.
I love you.
Who are we outside of our actions, and who are athletes outside of their plays, Peyton?
Yes.
Yeah. So who are we outside of our actions?
Rhetoric.
Very nice. Mm-hmm. Speaking of rhetoric, KNC Masterpiece joining us next. I don't really know what that means, but I'm going to go with it on the Fan. Sean and RJ here at 105 through the Fan. It is time for Crosstalk with the KNC Masterpiece on this Hump Day edition, by the way.
Hump Day
of 105 through the Fan. Morning, boys.
Where's Sean?
I just saw a video of...
Are you not going to let him... can I Joe Mazzulla this? Are you going to let him answer the question?
No. He should have been listening.
You got to reset. New audience members.
Okay, where's Sean?
I don't know. Should we tell...
Sean. I don't know. I don't think he said specifically on there. He's got a family thing today.
He's not here, Kevin.
Yeah, he's not here.
So he's not.
None of your business.
But he's not off for
Juneteenth. Honestly, he took a personal day.
No.
Okay. He took a personal day, and you're not allowed to ask. So that's what I'm gonna say.
Who's not allowed to ask?
Yeah, he did take.
I think by law you're not allowed to ask if they take personal days, right?
What?
How do you know how many personal days we have?
Two. I thought there was a rule.
Maybe.
I don't know. I made it up.
What are the laws?
But I'm not management, so I think I should be able to ask. True. I'm just a peon who works here.
Fair. Fair. What do we have coming up with the show?
Well, I want to get back to what I was going to say.
Okay, what were you going to say?
I just saw a video of two ostriches chasing a guy. What animal would you not want to get chased by the most? Because ostrich is right up there at the top.
Tiger.
What do you mean? Yeah,
I'd much rather get chased by an ostrich than
gorilla,
like a lion,
a tiger.
I said the most.
Hippo.
I said the most, Bobby.
Predator.
Wait, one.
So
the most. You just named off a bunch of them.
Right, I named off a bunch, but ostrich would be near the top for
you?
Yeah,
absolutely, dude.
Oh,
yeah.
Of getting chased by?
Yeah, they're terrifying. They're big.
You would want to get chased by?
No, I don't want to get chased by.
I think... The answer is Probably a bear.
The answer is anything that can catch me.
A polar bear specifically.
Oh, that polar bear will take your Coke and F you up.
Absolutely. So the polar bear
actually,
specifically.
Your head is the top of that Coke and they'll just drink it down.
Dude, did you see the video of the polar bear just mauling that one?
No. Oh,
there's a video. It's like years old.
I'm a person?
Yeah.
Oh,
it was years ago. There's you come across a polar bear. Black bear, grizzly bear,
cocaine bear.
You could play dead or get big, right? That's what you do. With the polar bear, it's just like good night.
Which one is attacking you, though?
Yeah, it's attacking you, huh?
Which one are you supposed to do with which one?
I don't know.
The black bear is not as aggressive.
The black bear you can chase off. The grizzly's just like you need to play dead.
And the polar bear is hunting you.
Yes,
that's the way that is.
Okay.
I will say I'm going to adjust your question. All right. I answered it, but I'm also going to adjust it. The animal I would least want to be chased by that can't kill me would be, I don't know, a goose or a raccoon. Obviously, rabies aside.
It's a dolphin.
Yeah, I don't want to be chased by a dolphin.
A dolphin could like drown me though.
Yeah. Well, before that, he's going to try to rape you.
Oh, I'm sorry. What?
Are you not familiar with this? Dolphins are well-known sexual predators.
Ducks are too.
That is actually
ducks are?
True.
Ducks are known.
Hang
for
on.
Yeah, go look at the videos. I mean, don't watch
with
the,
who? With people?
I mean.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
No,
ducks. No, dolphins.
Dolphins are dolphins.
I can't
not
speak.
Dolphins
no,
and
they
people.
They try to be weird with humans too.
Oh yeah.
I just knew it was.
I say we bring this back for crosstalk with G-Bag later today too. Because I'm pretty sure Dawson's going to say hippo.
Okay,
hippo
I didn't know about the ducks. I knew the hippo. Okay,
hippos are terrifying.
Okay,
but again, if it can catch you, then I don't want to be chased by it.
Can I give you a vague retelling of? Okay, I don't want to see whatever you're trying to show me right now, Bobby.
It's a public service from Isabella Rossellini where she explains that whole culture among ducks and it's acted out. I'm
her
dead
birthday
serious.
Was yesterday.
Wade Boggs told me a story once.
Well,
about him drinking 64 beers on a cross-country flight.
What if I told you it's even better than that?
Okay.
I know it seems unbelievable.
But it's Wade Boggs.
It's Wade Boggs. He told a story before the Dallas Card Show maybe last year. And he said he had hunted like all the big five or big seven or whatever the group of animals is.
The group of five?
Yes. But there was this hippo that was terrorizing this village where he was. And he was like eating kids and all this kind of stuff. And then they hunted the hippo down and killed the hippo. And he was like, and then across the river, I could see 3,000 people from the village were all hailing me because I had helped save their children and their village. It was amazing.
Wow.
Do you think that's a fairly accurate retelling? Yeah.
What about the hippo family? How did you think they felt?
Hungry.
Probably.
Mm.
On the show.
All right, yeah,
today,
so what's coming up on the show?
We do have Bruce Bochy joining us at 12:20 today. We'll ask him about defense. And then at 11:20, in honor of the Magic 8 Ball, what's the most ridiculous metric you've ever used to make a decision?
Mm.
You ever use a Magic 8 Ball and been like, whew.
Or flip a coin?
All signs point to yes.
Oh, my God.
I mean, it is a great thing to have bedside.
Yeah. So in high school, they called RJ the Magic 8 Ball because he's like, all signs point to yes.
Yeah, flipping a coin is pretty ridiculous, right?
Yeah.
It's a pretty ridiculous way to decide a
football
game.
It's no more ridiculous than the Magic 8 Ball.
No. But it's a ridiculous way to decide a football game.
I don't know. Probably letting my wife decide. I'd say
that's
like
the most ridiculous
coin,
way.
Or yeah. It's just dangerous.
Yeah. It's just like too much emotion.
What's the corgi's name?
I don't know.
Oh yeah,
the basketball shooting.
Oh buddy. Yeah, he was way off. He said
lied to
seven.
Us about
yeah.
the Mavs.
Stupid dog.
Yeah,
stupid dog.
I don't remember the corgi's name, but yeah, that should be fun.
Mike,
yes.
You ever meet Willie Mays?
Yes, I did. After I gave up the home run to Barry Bonds, he is in the clubhouse.
Oh.
So got to shake his hand, meet him for a second.
Yeah.
He's obviously he's dead now, but he was the greatest living baseball player until he passed away.
Like
there was obviously you could have arguments about when Ted Williams or Mickey Mantle or whoever were alive, but Willie was the greatest living baseball player. And then in the off season. I read his book, and I really recommend it. It's a great book. After watching the documentary, I believe it's on HBO.
Yeah.
So I watched the documentary.
Say Hey Willie Mays.
And then I'm like, I want to know more. Because you feel like you watch an hour and a half or 2 hours of a documentary of a whole person's life. And you're just like, I want to know more. And then the book just gets a lot into his relationship with Mickey Mantle because they were the same age growing up in New York. They were very close friends. I didn't know this, but in like the early 1980s, they did something at a casino. Just signed autographs at a casino. Major League Baseball banned them from baseball completely.
What? Like for
out
how
of
long?
Out of baseball, like a little bit, kind of like Pete Rose, but they were already in the Hall of Fame. And then a new commissioner came in and was like, we got to make this right. And Willie's like, I'll make it right. Like, he was willing to play. Mickey Mantle's like, F baseball. I'm never coming back. I'm never going anywhere ever again to a baseball stadium. Whoa. If baseball thought us signing autographs at a casino was disrespecting the game and we're kicked out of ever going to a major league stadium, I'm never going to a major league stadium again. And Willie Mays was able to talk his friend Mickey Mantle into like coming back to baseball in the 80s and the early 80s. Duke Schneider was the other center fielder in Brooklyn, and Willie always and Mickey always made sure that Duke was included in a lot of things, because a lot of times people say we just want Willie and Mickey, and Duke's a Hall of Famer, but he wasn't Willie and Mickey, but they always like wanted to make sure if we're doing a New York thing and it's about the 50s and this thing, Duke's coming with us.
You know, that's just I had no
idea. A lot of stuff like that in the book. Not only how great he was, but just the person that he was, too.
I was telling Chop earlier, like, you watch that documentary. I had no idea how hard the move to San Francisco was for him. Where, like, he had trouble, like, renting a house because people, it was just still such a racially tense time. Whoa. That when he gets to San Francisco, he's one of the biggest stars in professional sports, and people were refusing to rent him, like, houses in certain parts of San Francisco. 214 wants to know, Mike, who is the greatest living baseball player now?
I think that's a great question. I think that I'm going to get a lot of pushback on this, but I would now lean to Barry Bonds. But I do think that because of his history, that won't be the case. As in, I do not think for the next, let's just say, 20-plus years, people are going to say, well, Barry Bonds is the greatest living baseball player. I don't think people are going to go down that route, so you're going to have to pick somebody else.
No, Willie was pretty much universally described as that, except for Peyton, who thinks that his catch was overrated.
Yeah, he said his catch was awful.
What?
Well, when you watch that documentary, it was in the book and documentary, didn't a lot of his teammates go, that wasn't even one of his 10 best catches.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of his catches aren't on video.
Right. Yeah.
So they're like, they describe these catches that he would make. They're like, that one's on video because it's in the World Series.
The most amazing part of that catch to me is that there was a ball that traveled 480 feet and wasn't a homer.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Which, by the way, do we just misjudge things now? Like, how is a ball... How are people hitting home runs that far back then, and now nobody hits them more than 450?
The longest one this year was 476 by Ohtani last
night. That's just a deep flyout.
Here's what I don't know this, but sometimes we judged home runs because there was no outfield bleachers.
Yeah.
And so you could really see where it landed.
Yeah.
Now there's, it hit the bleacher here, and we're going to say, the arc of the ball and everything, and maybe we're way more accurate with it now. Or maybe we don't understand how much further that ball would have traveled till it would have hit the ground. Because there's times where a guy hits the ball to center field, it's 400 feet. It's 60 feet above the wall, and they're like, 452. And I'm like, I don't think that's right.
I think
that was close to 500 feet.
Yeah,
because there's no way guys were hitting the ball further 70 years ago. Like,
you don't think so.
I wouldn't think so.
When I was at RFK, there was a seat that was where Frank Howard hit a home run.
They still have the red seat at Fenway for Ted Williams.
Nobody during batting practice, whoever it was, Pujols, you name the guy who had tremendous power back in, let's say, the early to mid-2000s. Nobody in batting practice came within 25 feet of that.
Wow.
Of that. And I had to ask, was home plate in a different spot? Because this is impossible. There's not a human being hitting this seat during batting practice, in a game. Nobody's even coming close. Are we sure home plate was in the exact spot in 2007 that it was in, let's say, 1967? And they were like, yeah, it was exactly the same. And you kind of go, to your point, I'm like, the weights that guys do, the trainings that they do, the now hit a home run or it's kind of a worthless at bat at times approach. You're like, so nobody can hit the ball as far as Frank Howard?
It's crazy. Yeah. All right.
Maybe it's true.
Maybe it is. KNC Masterpiece is coming up next on 105 Through the Fan.
The TVs work?
Sean and RJ here, 105 Through the Fan. It is time for Crosstalk with the KNC Masterpiece on this Hump Day edition, Bobby
Hump Day
of 105 Through the Fan. Morning, boys.
Where's Sean?
I just saw a video of...
Are you going to let him... Can I Joe Mazzulla this? Are you going to let him answer the question?
No. He should have been listening.
You got to reset new audience.
Okay,
members.
Where is Sean?
I don't know. Should we tell Sean?
I don't know. I don't think he said specifically on there. He's got a family thing today.
He's not here, Kevin.
Yeah, he's not here.
So he's not.
Honestly, he took a personal day.
Okay.
He took a personal day, and you're not allowed to ask. So that's what I'm gonna say.
Who's not allowed to ask?
Yeah, he did take.
I think by law you're not allowed to ask if they take personal days, right?
What?
How do you know how many personal days we have?
Two. I thought there was a rule.
Maybe.
I don't know. I made it up.
What are the laws?
But I'm not management, so I think I should be able to ask. True. I'm just a peon who works here.
Fair. What do we have coming up with the show?
Well, I want to get back to what I was going to say.
Okay, what were you going to say?
I just saw a video of two ostriches chasing a guy. What animal would you not want to get chased by the most? Because ostrich is right up there at the top.
Tiger.
What do you mean? Yeah,
I'd much rather get chased by an ostrich than
a gorilla, a lion, a tiger, a hippo.
I said the most, Bobby.
Predator.
Wait, you just named off a bunch of them.
Right, I named off a bunch, but ostrich would be near the top for
you? Absolutely, dude.
Of getting chased by?
Yeah, they're terrifying. They're big.
You would want to get chased by?
No, I don't want to get chased
by. The answer is probably a bear.
The answer is anything that can catch me.
A polar bear specifically.
Oh, that polar bear will take your Coke and F you up.
Absolutely. So the polar bear specifically.
Your head is the top of that Coke and they'll just drink it down.
Dude, did you see the video of the polar bear just mauling that one?
No.
There's a video. It's like years old.
A person?
Yeah.
Oh,
it was years ago. You come across a polar bear. There's no black bear, grizzly bear,
cocaine bear.
You could play dead or get big, right? That's what you do. But the polar bear, it's just like good night.
Which one is attacking, though?
Yeah, it's attacking you, huh?
Which one are you supposed to do with which one?
I don't know.
The black bear is not as
the black bear. The black bear you can chase off. The grizzly's just like you need to play dead,
and the polar bear is hunting you.
Yes, that's
the way that is.
Okay.
I will say, I'm going to adjust your question. Right. I answered it, but I'm also going to adjust it. The animal I would least want to be chased by that can't kill me would be, I don't know, a goose or a raccoon. Obviously, rabies aside.
It's a dolphin.
Yeah, I don't want to be chased by a dolphin.
A dolphin could, like, drown me, though.
Yeah, well, before that, he's going to try to rape you.
I'm sorry. What?
Are you not familiar with this? Dolphins are well-known sexual predators.
Ducks are too.
That is.
Ducks are?
Ducks are known.
Hang on.
Yeah, go look at the videos. I mean, don't watch.
With
the,
who? With people?
I mean.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
No,
ducks.
No, dolphins.
Dolphins are dolphins.
I can't
not
speak.
Dolphins.
No,
and people.
They try to be weird with humans too.
Oh yeah.
I just knew it was.
I say we bring this back for crosstalk with G Bag later today too. I'm pretty sure Dawson's gonna say hippo.
Okay,
hippo
I didn't know about the ducks.
I know the hippo.
Okay.
Hippos are terrifying.
Okay.
But again, if it can catch you, then I don't want to be chased by it.
Can I give you a vague retelling of, okay, I don't want to see whatever you're trying to show me right now, Bobby.
It's a public service from Isabella Rossellini where she explains that whole culture among ducks and it's acted out.
Her birthday was yesterday.
Wade Boggs told me a story once.
Well,
about him drinking 64 beers on a cross-country flight.
What if I told you it's even better than that?
Okay.
I know it seems unbelievable.
But it's Wade Boggs.
It's Wade Boggs. He told a story before the Dallas Card Show maybe last year. And he said he had hunted like all the big five or big seven or whatever the group of animals is.
The group of five?
Yes. But there was this hippo that was terrorizing this village where he was. And he was like eating kids and all this kind of stuff. And then they hunted the hippo down and killed the hippo. And he was like, and then across the river, I could see 3,000 people from the village were all hailing me because I had helped save their children and their village. It was amazing.
Wow.
Do you think that's a fairly accurate retelling?
Yeah.
What about the hippo family? How do you think they felt?
Hungry.
Probably.
Mm.
On the
all
show
right, yeah,
today,
so what's coming up on the show?
We do have Bruce Bochy joining us at 12:20 today. We'll ask him about defense. And then at 11:20, in honor of the Magic 8 Ball, what's the most ridiculous metric you've ever used to make a decision? You ever use a Magic 8 Ball and been like, whew.
Or flip a coin?
All signs point to yes.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
I mean, it is a great thing to have bedside.
Yeah. So in high school, they called RJ the Magic 8 Ball because he's like, all signs point to yes.
Flipping a coin is pretty ridiculous, right?
Yeah.
It's a pretty ridiculous way to decide a
football
game.
It's no more ridiculous than the Magic 8 Ball.
No. But it's a ridiculous way to decide a football game.
I don't know. Probably letting my wife decide. I'd say
that's like the most ridiculous
coin, or it's just dangerous.
Yeah. Just like too much emotion.
What's the corgi's name?
I don't know.
Oh yeah,
the basketball shooting.
Oh Betty. Yeah, he was way off. He
that
said
lied to
seven.
Us about yeah, the Mavs.
Stupid dog.
Yeah. Stupid dog. I don't remember the corgi's name, but yeah, that should be fun.
Mike, yes. You ever meet Willie Mays?
Yes, I did. After I gave up the home run to Barry Bonds, he is in the clubhouse.
Oh.
So got to shake his hand, meet him for a second. He's dead now, but he was the greatest living baseball player until he passed away. There was obviously you could have arguments about when Ted Williams or Mickey Mantle or whoever were alive, but Willie was the greatest living baseball player. And then in the off season, I read his book, and I really recommend it. It's a great book. After watching the documentary, I believe it's on HBO.
Yeah.
So I watched the documentary.
Say Hey, Willie Mays.
And then I'm like, I want to know more. Because you feel like you watch an hour and a half or 2 hours of a documentary of a whole person's life, and you're just like, I want to know more. And then the book just gets a lot into his relationship with Mickey Mantle, because they were the same age growing up in New York. They were very close friends. I didn't know this. But in like the early 1980s, they did something at a casino, just signed autographs at a casino. Major League Baseball banned them from baseball completely.
What? Like for
out of baseball, like a little bit kind of like Pete Rose, but they were already in the Hall of Fame. And then a new commissioner came in and was like, we got to make this right. And Willie's like, I'll make it right. Like, he was willing to play. Mickey Mantle's like, F baseball. I'm never coming back. I'm never going anywhere ever again to a baseball stadium. Whoa. If baseball thought us signing autographs at a casino was disrespecting the game and we're kicked out of ever going to a major league stadium, I'm never going to a major league stadium again. And Willie Mays was able to talk his friend Mickey Mantle into coming back to baseball. In the 80s, in the early 80s, Duke Schneider was the other center fielder in Brooklyn, and Willie always and Mickey always made sure that Duke was included in a lot of things, because a lot of times people say, we just want Willie and Mickey, and Duke's a Hall of Famer, but he wasn't Willie and Mickey, but they always like wanted to make sure, if we're doing a New York thing and it's about the 50s and this thing, Duke's coming with us.
You know, that's just I had no idea.
A lot of stuff like that in the book. Not only how great he was, but just the person that he was, too.
I was telling Chop earlier, like, you watch that documentary. I had no idea how hard the move to San Francisco was for him. Where, like, he had trouble, like, renting a house because it was just still such a racially tense time. Whoa. That when he gets to San Francisco, he's one of the biggest stars in professional sports, and people were refusing to rent him, like, houses in certain parts of San Francisco. 214 wants to know, Mike, who is the greatest living baseball player now?
I think that's a great question. I think that I'm going to get a lot of pushback on this, but I would now lean to Barry Bonds. But I do think that because of his history, that won't be the case. As in, I do not think for the next, let's just say, 20 plus years, people are going to say, well, Barry Bonds is the greatest living baseball player. I don't think people are going to go down that route, so you're going to have to pick somebody else.
No, Willie was pretty much universally described as that, except for Peyton, who thinks that his catch was overrated.
Yeah, he said his catch was awful.
What?
Well, when you watch that documentary, it was in the book and documentary, didn't a lot of his teammates go, that wasn't even one of his 10 best catches.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of his catches aren't on video.
Right.
So they're like, they describe these catches that he would make. They're like, that one's on video because it's in the World Series.
The most amazing part of that catch to me is that there was a ball that traveled 480 feet and wasn't a homer.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Which, by the way, do we just misjudge things now? Like, how is a ball...
How are people hitting home runs that far back then, and now nobody hits them more than 450?
The longest one this year was 476 by Otani last
Saturday. Just a deep fly out.
Here's what I don't know this, but sometimes we judged home runs because there was no outfield bleachers.
Yeah.
And so you could really see where it landed.
Yeah.
Now there's, well, it hit the bleacher here, and we're going to say, well, the arc of the ball and everything, and maybe we're way more accurate with it now. Or maybe we don't understand how much further that ball would have traveled till it would have hit the ground. Because there's times where a guy hits the ball to center field, it's 400 feet. It's 60 feet above the wall, and they're like, 452. And I'm like, I don't think that's right.
I think
that was close to 500 feet.
Yeah.
Because there's no way guys were hitting the ball further 70 years ago. Like,
you don't think so.
It feels unlikely.
I wouldn't think so.
When I was at RFK, there was a seat that was where Frank Howard hit a home run.
They still have the red seat at Fenway for Ted Williams.
Nobody during batting practice, whoever it was, Pujols, you name the guy who had tremendous power back in, let's say, the early to mid-2000s. Nobody in batting practice came within 25 feet of that.
Wow.
Of that. And I had to ask, was home plate in a different spot? Because this is impossible. There's not a human being hitting this seat during batting practice, in a game. Nobody's even coming close. Are we sure home plate was in the exact spot in 2007 that it was in, let's say, 1967? And they were like, yeah, it was exactly the same. And you kind of go, to your point, I'm like, the weights that guys do, the trainings that they do, the now hit a home run or it's kind of a worthless at bat at times approach. You're like, so nobody can hit the ball as far as Frank Howard?
It's crazy. Yeah. All right.
Maybe it's true.
Maybe it is. KNC Masterpiece is coming up next on 105 Through the Fan.
The TVs work?
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.